You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks. I'm your host, James Marcita, and this is episode 194. On today's show, we're going to talk about Frank Ntilikina's ankle injury. Boo! We're going to talk about one-game trends. I'm going to take a deeper dive into the data from Thursday's game against Oklahoma City to see if we can figure out anything interesting going on. Granted, only one game, but let's take a look. Why not, right? I'm going to talk about Billy Hernan Gomez' playing time, that ongoing saga. I'm going to talk about Maurice Endor's shameful tweet. He's no longer a Knick, but once a Knick, always a Knick, and we got to hold these guys to the highest standards. And I'm going to give you guys a mini preview of tonight's home opener against the Detroit Pistons. Let's start the show.
Yes!
All right, let's talk about Frank. Dear sweet Frank. Oh, Frankie. He hurt his ankle in practice the other day. The picks looked pretty bad. He was on the ground, making a face. He was being helped off the court. I suggest you look up these picks if you haven't seen them. There's one with Mills and Perry, like, standing in the background looking angry, upset, wishing that the reporters weren't there taking photos. It's a pretty good little Easter egg. And the initial report, after these gruesome photographs came out, were that he stepped on Billy Hernan Gomez's foot. Which leads one to, you know, naturally question, did Billy lash out in anger for being benched? No one can say for sure what happened, although Frank did say later that he actually hurt his ankle, quote-unquote, changing directions on a box out, excuse me. I mean, look. Snitches get stitches, so it's understandable that he'd cover for Billy. But I think we all know what happened here. Billy, clean up your act. This is why you're on the bench. Injuring our rookie stud. After all that, it looked pretty bad. After all that, though, he is only questionable for Saturday's home opener against Detroit. He's not ruled out immediately. And the Knicks did not take an x-ray, which is good for the outlook of his injury. But just take a fucking x-ray. Would you mind? It's like posting on Instagram for these guys. Like, just take an x-ray. Take a look. But anyway, it's probably not serious. I would be shocked if he played. They've been cautious with him so far. So I don't expect him to play Saturday night against Detroit. Which is, let's face it, history's greatest nightmare. Primarily because I have tickets to the game tonight. It's the first time I've ever gone to a home opener... for any of my teams in any sport. I'm still really excited about it. But it's a little bit of a bummer. I got to change up my approach. I was going to wear my brand new Frank Ntilikina t-shirt. But I think I'll have to go with the classic Kristaps instead. And just hope that he goes for 50. There's other things we can root for. I am very upset that I don't get to scout the young Frenchman in person. But, you know, that's the way it goes. Life goes on. Obla di. Obla freaking da. Let's be serious for a second, though. This is totally fine. It's totally fine. It's unfortunate that he's injured, you know, this early in the season. But it's just a sprained ankle. It happens to everyone. This isn't a big man with, like, an Achilles problem or something. And people who use this opportunity to bring up Dennis Smith Jr. and people who use this opportunity to call Frank a bust deserve our greatest condemnation and, frankly, should be punished. For saying something so foolish. I don't know what it should be. Like, send him to an island. Where their only company is Reggie Miller and Mike Rappaport. Something just where you want to, like, rip your own hair out one hair at a time. Because that's a bad take. It's a bad take. The most high-profile ankle injury person in recent years is Steph, who had much more serious ankle injuries than this. Curry, of course, we're talking about here. Not Marbury. And everyone freaked out about it, and he's fine. You may have heard. Steph Curry's fine. Frank's going to be fine. It's a bummer that it happened this early in the season. But let's all put this in perspective, all right? Just want to wrap up one other small injury report. Michael Beasley is also questionable for tonight. and we need his offense. I never thought we'd be saying this, but we need Michael Beasley's offense, so I hope he plays. That leads us into, actually, our deep dive into Thursday's game against Oklahoma City. I gave you an instant analysis when the game was over, you know, using box score stuff, using the eye test. But now that a little bit of time has passed, I'm able to use some more advanced statistics. These all come from cleaning the glass. And here's something that stands out from Thursday's game. The defense, which we spend so much time talking about, the Knicks' defense being so awful, not knowing rotations, not having good individual defenders, the defense was actually okay. If you look at it on a per-possession basis, Oklahoma City scored 103.2 points per 100 possessions. That's only 38th percentile for all the games that have been played in the NBA this year. So for the NBA's, you know, scoring efficiency averages, that's only in the 38th percentile, which means that the Knicks' defensive effort, giving up 103.2 points per 100 possessions, was in the 62nd percentile. That's better than average. And that includes forcing turnovers. They forced turnovers on 18.9% of Thunder possessions, which is good for 84th percentile in the league so far. By the numbers, their defense was actually okay. However, you might say whatever with your however, but I will say however, the offense was atrocious. 84.2 points per 100 possessions. That's 6th percentile in the league this season. It's a young season, but that's low. Now, people want to point to turnovers, and turnovers were a big problem, for sure. The Knicks turned the ball over on 24.2% of their possessions, but they didn't lead to extra possessions for the Thunder, in part because the Knicks rebounded 29.8% of their offensive rebounding opportunities, which puts them in the 61st percentile, compared to the Thunder, who only rebounded 26.1% of their offensive rebounding opportunities, and that's in the 41st percentile. At the end of the day, not counting garbage time, each team finished with 95 possessions. So turnovers are something that are very bad. No matter how you slice it, the Knicks did horribly at that. But at the end of the Thursday's game, with a couple other factors, one of them being offensive rebounding, they didn't wind up getting so many less possessions than the Thunder. They just did much less with the possessions they got. Their non-garbage time possessions were the same, 95 possessions. The Knicks did not shoot well. Okay? That's putting it mildly. Their effective field goal percentage was 44.8%, which would put them in the 12th percentile. Oklahoma City's was 52.5%, which puts them in the 61st percentile. You know? So again, like, the Knicks didn't do a terrible job against them, holding Oklahoma City to that shooting number, but they themselves did not shoot well at all. Part of that is that they're not breaking down the defense. You can see that in a couple of ways. Their free throw rate is 14.3%. 14.3% of their shots are free throws. That's in the 22nd percentile. 19% of Oklahoma City shots were free throws. So that's 48th percentile. So Oklahoma City was getting to the line. The Knicks were not. Let's look at where their shots came from. This could explain the shooting differential. 42% of the Knicks' shots came in the mid-range, which is too much. It's 61st percentile. It's an improvement from last year, so maybe I'm asking for a little too much, but it's still too much. You don't want more than half your shots coming from the mid-range. The Thunder, for instance, only 26% of their shots came from mid-range, which is good for third percentile, so one of the lowest in the league, because that's good, because they're efficient, they're smart. 25% of the Knicks' shots came at the rim. That's 32nd percentile in the league versus 34% of the Thunder shots coming from the rim. And that's 67th percentile, right? Now let's talk about threes. Only 29% of the Knicks' shots came from three-point land. That puts them in the 51st percentile. Okay. However, the Thunder, 40% of their shots came from three. which puts them in the 90th percentile. So once again, the Knicks shot 44.8% from effective field goal, their effective field goal percentage, and that factors in three-point shots. Thunder got a lot more three-point shots. Their effective field goal percentage was 52.5%. That being said, taking away shot distribution, the Thunder also shot better at the rim. They shot 62.1% at the rim versus the Knicks' 58.3%. So, not too huge a difference, but big enough. That being said, that was only 45th percentile for the Thunder shooting at the rim. So the Knicks did a decent job defending shots at the rim. They just themselves couldn't get it done. Their percentage put them in the 22nd percentile. The Thunder, once again, were better from three-point range. They shot 32.4% versus the Knicks' 29.3%. Terrible. But again, that's only in the 41st percentile from the Thunder. So the Knicks did a decent job defending the three-point shot. They got killed, interestingly enough, in the mid-range in terms of shooting percentages, somewhere where the Thunder didn't shoot too much from. But they still shot 26% of their shots. A quarter of the Thunder shots came from mid-range. And they shot 43.8% from that distance, which is 41st. Sorry. Yeah. Wait. What? Who? I think I wrote down some stats weird, because I'm a little bit confused. Okay, I see what I did here. So the Thunder shot 43.8% from mid-range. That puts them in the 90th percentile. And the Knicks only shot 34.5% from mid-range, which puts them in the 41st percentile. So the Knicks took a ton of shots from the mid-range. It was by far their least effective shot. And the Thunder shot way better than from them from mid-range, even though they took a lot less. But so if we look at, you know, all three levels, at the rim, mid-range, three-point shot, the Thunder shot better than the Knicks. But from the rim and the three-point line, the Knicks did a decent job defending them. They just got worked in mid-range. And the Thunder took better shots. I want to talk about transition opportunities, because that's something that Hornacek said he wants more from his team this year. But first, just want to remind you guys, you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Sports Podcast Network. Your team, your story, every day. If you like the Knicks, but you like another basketball team too, check out that Locked On. If you like the Knicks, but you like football too, check out that Locked On. We've got a podcast for every sport and every team, in basketball and football. Locked On Knicks, Locked On Podcast Network. Listen to it. Okay, let's talk about transition. So the Knicks weren't getting a lot of shots at the rim, as we saw. They weren't getting free throws. One way they could get Mo better looks is in transition. They were actually more efficient than the Thunder in transition. On transition plays, they scored 135.7 points per 100 possessions. And the Thunder scored 127.6 points per 100 transition possessions. So actually, from an efficiency standpoint, the Knicks were in the 77th percentile in this one game. Again, this is all one game, but we're looking for some early trends. They were in the 77th percentile in their transition scoring versus the Thunder, who were in the 61st percentile. The problem is they didn't get into transition nearly as much as the Thunder. 14% of their plays were transition plays, which puts them in the third percentile. 32.6% of the Thunder's plays were transition plays, which would put them in the 100th percentile. So the very best rate. Why did that happen? How did that happen? Let's take a closer look. Transition comes from steals, right? A lot of the time. So 87.5% of the Knicks' steals led to transition plays versus 91.9% of the Thunder's steals, which led to transition plays. A difference, but not a huge one. Here's an interesting difference, though, and a very big one. Only 24% of the Knicks' defensive rebounding opportunities turned into transition plays, which would put them in the third percentile. They weren't pushing off of misses. 74% of the Thunder's defensive rebounds turned into transition plays, which would put them in the 100th percentile. This is the Russell Westbrook effect. The Knicks do not have anyone even remotely in the same class as Russell Westbrook. Their point guards struggled mightily. Ramon Sessions and Ron Baker, and to a lesser extent, Frank Ntilikina. We'll talk about that in a second. But they don't have anyone who can push off of rebounds right now. At least they didn't in that first game. If they look at this, if they listen to this, maybe they can be like, oh, you know what? We should push more. Their bigs can move. They can handle the ball. But without that, you know, speedy point guard, that floor general, it's tough to push off misses. So, something to keep an eye on going forward. At the end of the day, the Knicks' defense was okay. The Thunder were just much more efficient on offense. They got to the rim more. They shot higher percentages. So, that'll be something to look for. It'll be interesting. We gave Jeff a lot of shit for saying that he didn't play Willie because of his defense. Billy, excuse me, gotta donate to the Billy Willie curse jar. Maybe there's something to that. I don't know. Their defense was all right at second glance. The Thunder missed some open shots, has to be said. But if you're looking at like one major culprit for the Knicks from that game, it was their offense. Let's look at a couple of other interesting stats from that game. We're talking about Kristaps Porzingis a lot this season, and hopefully for the rest of our Knicks lives. This is his year where he is the man. We all know that, right? And when you are the man, we want you to get touches. Last year, he didn't get nearly enough touches. It was very disheartening. This year, in the first game, he had a 30.9 usage rate. He used 30.9% of the Knicks' possessions on offense. That was the highest on the team and good for 95th percentile in the league. Exactly where he should be. So Kristaps got plenty of touches. We're all good there. Let's look at a couple of surprising stats, or maybe not surprising, depending on your viewpoint. Doug McDermott had a 26.7 assist percentage, which in this young season is good for 95th percentile among players playing his position, playing on the wing. So we've talked a lot about him being one-dimensional, just being a shooter. But he's shown an ability to cut to the basket so far in his early Knicks career. We saw that in the preseason. We saw that with Kristaps' one assist the other night. It was a beautiful assist to a cutting Doug McDermott. And now he's showing an ability to pass a little bit, to keep the ball moving. He had one of the higher plus-minuses on the team, perhaps. This is one of the reasons why. So that's encouraging. Let's talk about something a little bit less encouraging. Ramon Sessions. People gave a lot of shit to, Ron Baker. Ramon. There's something there with the sound of their names. Ramon. Maybe that's what we call the both of them, Ramon. We'll just start combining them, their stats, calling them Ramon. But Baker didn't look good, had a lot of turnovers. However, Ramon Sessions had a 9.1 assist percentage. Good for fourth percentile among point guards. And he had a 46.2 turnover percentage. He turned over the ball on 46.2% of Knicks' possessions. That's second percentile in the league. Very, very bad. Let's contrast that with Ron Baker, who had a 21.4 assist percentage and a 28.6 turnover percentage. Both of those... the assist percentage is like, okay, a little low. Turnover percentage, also bad, but again, Ramon Sessions, 46.2 turnover percentage. Ron Baker, 28.6 turnover percentage. So he was bad, but not nearly as bad as Ramon Sessions. And Ramon Sessions was not running the offense well at all. Now, Frank only played 5 minutes, but interestingly enough, he had a 25% assist percentage, the highest on the team of any point guard. So maybe, once Frank gets healthy... Maybe we see a lot less Ramon Sessions and more Frank and still like a decent amount of Ron Baker, unfortunately. One last interesting little factoid from the game. Ron and Ennis both had elite steal percentages for their positions. Kanter stole 5.8% of the time, and Ron Baker swiped the ball. Ball swiped 6.4% of the time. Again, this is by position, but that's 97th percentile for Kanter at the center position and 95th percentile for Ron Baker. So, you know, turn the ball over too much, but he's stealing at a quasi-elite rate. All right, I want to talk about Billy Hernan Gomez. Can we talk about him? But first, just want to remind you, you're listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Okay, let's talk about Billy. Oh, Billy. Again, he was out of the rotation on Thursday. I've been thinking a lot about it. If it's only one game for some dumb motivational tactic, then fine. All right, fine. But unless he's, like, insubordinate, this earn it argument is dumb. He was first team all-rookie last year. He earned it. If he's being a dick, he's, like, pouting and stuff, fine. If he's clearly not studying the defense, not paying attention in meetings or whatever, fine. But otherwise, you let him play through mistakes. Like, the one caveat here is you never know what's going on behind the scenes. And if Billy is being a dick, I don't necessarily want Hornacek to air out that dirty laundry. However, it's a concerning trend because the he's got to earn it over O'Quinn thing. Just based on, like, preseason is nonsense. That's a nonsense reason. But if he's benching him for one game, like maybe two, you know, I'll withhold my judgment a little bit. I'll allow it. Like a judge who's letting a prosecutor do some wild shit. It's like, I'll allow it, Jeff, but you better be going somewhere with this. You know what I mean? And soon. And soon. I've heard people say, well, maybe he's trying to increase the trade value of Enes Kanter and Kyle O'Quinn. You don't do that at the expense of your building block. That's not smart. You can still play Billy and increase these guys' trade values. Like, does that actually work? Like, why do you need to sit Billy to increase their trade value? There's plenty of film on these guys already. And even if you don't start them, like I said, you can still play them. Just play them a little bit less. You'll still have film for guys to watch. How does playing Billy 3 minutes increase these guys' trade value? I don't see that at all. I think that's a bunch of nonsense. Something else that's a bunch of nonsense is a tweet from Maurice Endor. I want to shame him real quick. This is bad stuff. He was a Knick, and we got to hold these guys to high standards. Once a Knick, always a Knick. He tweeted, HPV vaccine. Like, and then a bunch of emoji thinking faces. Y'all really let them do that to you kids? Makes no sense at all. Let nature do what it do. Hashtag not my kids. Hashtag vaccine free forever. All of the science is in disagreement with this. This is an ignorant take. You must vaccinate your kids. Please. It helps eliminate disease. Let nature do what it do. I hope a tree falls on you. Let nature do what it do. I don't really, because I don't wish harm on people. Which is why I'm telling you to vaccinate your kids. Vaccinate yourself. If you can. If you're a kid listening to this. If you're Maurice Endor's kids and you're listening to this, sneak out the house. Go see the doctor and get vaccinated. The whole world will thank you. Vaccines don't work when people refuse to use them. I don't want to spend much more time on this, but this is a real pet peeve of mine. This flat earth bullshit. Like, science is real. It tells us real things. Listen to its findings. It's not like a belief system. I mean, it could be. People could use it that way. But there's evidence. Right? Science isn't just like licking your finger and sticking it up in the air. Well, that's primitive science. Which way is the wind blowing? You know what I mean, though. Listen to science. Come on. This is embarrassing. I want to give you guys a mini preview of tonight's home opener against the Detroit Pistons. Detroit so far this year has beat the Hornets 102-90. And they have lost to the Wizards 115-111. I fully expect them to beat the Knicks. You never know, I guess. But they got Reggie Jackson and now Avery Bradley in the backcourt. So figure 700 more turnovers tonight from Ron and Ramon. From Ron Moan. Andre Drummond is at center, who Rolo used to cook, interestingly enough. He's not a huge scoring threat, so maybe our bigs can hang. You know, one of the big weaknesses in our team is, you know, defense from that center position. But with Andre Drummond, you know, he's a great rebounder, but so are our bigs, so we can hang with him there. Tobias Harris is that small forward who is sort of kind of okay. I feel like he's just inconsistent. I would need to dive a little bit deeper into the numbers to see what's going on there. And they got Stanley Johnson at power forward. I guess those guys can like switch around, but Kristaps is going to cook either one of those guys. I feel it. So they got a chance. If Kristaps goes for like 60, tonight. But that backcourt, Reggie Jackson and Avery Bradley, I think they're going to just destroy the Knicks. I mean, every backcourt is until we start getting Franks more time. Ron Moan is not the answer. All right? Okay, that's it for me for today, for this episode of Locked On Knicks. Thank you guys so much for listening to the show. We really appreciate it. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks, also at NBA Injury Report. The E is a 3 in that. Rate us on iTunes, reviews, hopefully good ones. We're working hard every day, trying to give you guys a good show. If you want to give me some constructive feedback, that's cool. Send it to lockedonknicks@gmail.com. Try not to be a dick about it. I'm trying to do this for you. You know what I mean? Most of you guys have been super supportive, and it's been really great. I don't know why I'm complaining. There's like 2 or 3 people out of the thousands and thousands of people who listen to this who are like, you suck. But most people have been very nice, and we appreciate that outpouring of support. Hope you guys have a great weekend. Be nice to each other. Try to, like, say hello to a neighbor. Make some eye contact with some other humans. Be good out there, alright? Peace!